wanted to look, take a look at the fourth parak, and it was true of the Rambam. The Rambam begins, it really stems from the Rif. The Rif quotes a braisa at the end of a Sechta Yuma, which the Ran says he doesn't know what the source of it is. The Rif obviously had it from someplace, so we don't know the source. For us, the source is the Rif. This braisa lists Arbov, Esrim, Dvorim, Akvinus, Achuba. There are 24 things which stand in the way of tshuva. It means these are obstacles, difficulties. Nothing is insurmountable in this world. Nothing is insurmountable. What did the Chassidim say? I think they say from the Chiddush HaRim or the Sfas Emes. Such a Gemara, a very strange Gemara, that if you're in someone's house, whatever the Balabayas tells you to do, you have to do, except if he tells you to get out. So why don't you have to listen if he tells you to get out? Strange Gemara. So some want to say that Mitzay is really Rosh Tevis, and it's Mitzat Isra. If there's something, you know, not 100% correct about it, you don't have to listen to them. I think the Gerer Rebbe is the Rambshat in the Gemara. Kol Oyim Alechol Balabayas Asay refers to the Rabbeinu Shalom. Whatever the Rabbeinu Shalom says in this world, you have to do. Chutz, except one thing, it's safe. He tells you to get lost, you have to try doubly hard to do true. So nothing is insurmountable. But there's difficult and difficult and extremely difficult. So these 24 things stand in the way of tshuva. I wanted to take a look really at the Rambam, at Halacha Dalet. Umehem chamish dvarim, five of these 24 things, it's unlikely that if you do one of these following five things, you're going to do tshuva, the Rambam says. And why is that? Most people consider them inconsequential matters. And they sin, but the person that does it thinks there's nothing wrong. So what's there to do tshuva from? Like what do we say? The Novi in Yirmiyah says, the most severe mishpat from the Rabbeinu Shel Olam is when we claim lo chatos. Because if lo chatosi, so then there's no reason to do tshuva. If we recognize that we failed, so then we have the necessity of doing tshuva. We may do tshuva now, we may not do tshuva now, we may succeed, we may not succeed, but at least we know there's an issue. But if we say lo chatosi, there's no issue. Rabbeinu Shel Olam, I'm clean. Find the way I am. And that's the problem with these five things, the Rambam, these five of the 24, is that they're subtle. And because they're subtle, we don't take them seriously. The Elohim, and these are the five things. And they're instructive about certain general themes also. Oichel misudo she'eino maspekes levalem. If I eat, I'm invited to someone, and he really doesn't have enough money to properly take care of me and himself, so I shouldn't cook, because he's going to give away the little bit of food that he has for himself, or some of it, and give it to me too. So, but he invited me. Why did he invite me? He was embarrassed not to invite me, so he asked me to come. But I know the person's in dire straits, so I should find a way to get out of it. So what's the problem though if I come? He did ask me to come. So the Rambam says, Shezeh avak gezel. It has the taint of gezel. It's tainted. Not gezel, gezel. Why? Ruhu. Medama shalechoto. And the person feels I didn't sin. V'yomar kluma chalti ala berushusa. Listen, I didn't, break into the guy's house in the middle of the night, I didn't wait to park outside Barry's place, and when he left, you know, and everything was all kind of broken and cleaned the fridge out, you know, I didn't do that. I was invited in. You're right, you were invited in. But did you take into account the fact that he's not in a position to do what he did? Did you take that into account? So if you didn't, then what you did is tainted. Now, at times, sometimes the initiative came from the other side. Sometimes I imposed myself upon someone else. And it's a situation that they really should not be doing, but it's too uncomfortable for them to say they're not going to do it. So, this is the
context. First of all, the first case where the guy was, where the guy really invited you. Right? Hamam Plone Chavero is considered.
Oh, so you have to find out. You're right. You're in a big bind. You were in a mighty big bind.
And secondly, out of all the Averis that the Rambam could have listed, this is the, not only one of the five, this is what he starts with.
Yeah, that I don't know, but this is one of the five. But the issue the Rambam is telling us is the following. There are a lot of things in life which take place which are subtle. Subtle. On the surface, everything's clean. But if we look past the surface, it's not so clean. Right? We have the Rambam similarly. The Rambam similarly deals with Geneva. Right? Gambling, according to the Rambam. What's the problem? The problem is it's a chashash gezel. Why? Because the person, right, says that nobody wants to lose. He figures he's going to win. That's why he plays the game. So even though he doesn't mind, he's intending to take money from you, which is tainted. But nevertheless, the money that you take from him if you win is also tainted. You know, the fact that he wanted to take money from you under those circumstances doesn't make the money that you take from him under those circumstances any less tainted. Now again, if I didn't put a gun to the guy's head, I didn't force him to, you know, he came to play cards. He wants to play cards. He likes to play cards. So I joined the game. Happened to be I got the best of him. So, now, you have to realize another thing in the Rambam. I don't know if we're right or we're wrong, but to the largest extent, we live in a place where poverty is not the day-to-day issue that we deal with. Not that there isn't poverty, but we don't deal with poverty day-to-day. There was a rabbi in Johannesburg, Oliver Shalom, Nachman Bernard, Oliver Shalom, he died. I have to call his rabbits and I haven't spoken to him. He died last year of so he said Johannesburg was known as the wealthiest Jewish community in the world. So he says that this was the Fifth Avenue Synagogue of Johannesburg, Oxford Synagogue, Fifth Avenue Synagogue of Johannesburg. He says, I went up in the Bima, he says, and I shocked them. The Chevra Kedisha in Johannesburg, the profits that it makes are directed towards communal stocks. That's what the money goes for. So one of the things they give money for is moschit. So he says, I shocked them. I said, Rabbi Isai, this is the wealthiest Jewish community in the world. Do you know that there were 500 families in Johannesburg that accepted help from the Chevra Kedisha for Pesach this year? So, you know, as I say, we don't deal with poverty day to day. That's not a million. In Poland, in Russia, in those countries, the Arabic countries I can't talk about. I can tell you about my myself. Poverty and my family's bichlal, they were comfortable in Europe. Comfortable. Business, whatever. But we're comfortable. What my father-in-law tells me, like, the poverty was such, like, you know, people were curious, like, did the neighbors have butter for their bread? At kedeikach. And it's not on our radar, such things. But in a society where it's on the radar, the Rambam is cautioning you. In our society, it may happen sometime in our life that we'll be guilty of this. But we're not going to be guilty too often of this, because that's not the context in which we live. In their society, it was very easy to violate this. And we wanted to be very, very careful. You know, what was reality and what were pretensions. So,
Then, even if the people aren't that poor here, but if somebody's like an Oreah and comes to and asks a request that he knows the Baal Bas can't say no to, so that's also...
That could be, yeah, that's true. If you make a request, you could wind up in such a...
Saying, can you give me a ride back to Washington Heights? He's not
going to
say no. He doesn't really
want to
do it, and so
it's shoshes. We have to be careful. It's more likely, right, if we impose upon someone else, we may overstep our bounds. So, the Rambam is a call to live with chokhmah. So the Rambam is, that's step number one, to live with chokhmah, to really assess what's going on in the situation that I'm in. And the surface is not always the truth. Sometimes what looks nice on the surface, Avraham Kalmanovich, the president of Mir Yeshiva in New York. So he once joked, and he said that David HaMelech wrote, "Aromim Mecha Hashem Ki Didi Sari V'Lei Simachta O Yivali." So he says, you know what this passage is saying? As a joke, he says. He says, a man came from Europe, and so he knew after a while his relatives are going to come visit him. They want to see if he's a schlepper or if he made it. And life wasn't going so well. So he decided, listen, I have no choice. So what did he do? He went and he borrowed a ton of money. And he fixed himself up a fancy house. And everything was just pish-posh. So he said, "Arumim cha Hashem, I praise the Rabbeinu Shalom ki didli son, you made me poor. But my enemies did not laugh at me." And there's a lot of truth in that life. There's a lot of life that is that. So this is step number one, the Rambam tells us. Step number two. It's very interesting. Hamishtameish ba'avoyte shel oni. It says if you use, take a mashkin, take collateral for a loan. You take a collateral from a poor person, we'll see why a poor person, the Rambam is a very interesting pshat. And you use the collateral. So the Rambam writes, "Sha'avet shaloni, enerchil galakovon kardum amachresha." What does an odi have to give you for collateral? He has an axe that he has a shovel. Kardum lachbor, he has a shovel, machresha, he has a plow. That's what he has. He has preference.
Isn't that the first Taraisa?
That depends. It's not. In certain situations, yes. In certain cases, no. If you're not interfering with his ability to earn a living, it's not a problem.
Right? Even his pillow at night, you can't.
If he needs, yeah. But let's say you had a right. It's a situation, let's say, in the day when you're allowed to use it, when he's not using it. The time that you're allowed to take these things is mashal. Let's say in the season. So you took it from him in those times. Now, so he says, what does it say of an oni? A rich man has a Rembrandt on the wall. So he says, Barry, he says, I want to borrow $1 million. But I'll give you this. Here's my Rembrandt. Take it. Put it in the vault. And that's it. You have a mind. It's worth more than $1 million. You have a mashkin. You're secure. So you understand the fact that if you can't play around with his Rembrandt, it's going to get damaged. So you leave it well wrapped up. You leave it in the armored vault. And that's it. You don't touch the thing. But what does the poor guy have? The poor guy has a shovel. He has a plow. He has an axe. So these things are going to outlive all of us. His great-great-great-grandchildren are going to be using them still. So what's it to him if I take his axe and I chop up my firewood with it while I have it? Nothing's happening to his axe. It's not going to get damaged. It won't probably get damaged. I'll pay him for it. It's not going to get damaged. His great-great-grandson will still be using the same axe. So what's the problem? That's why he talks about Avoyto Shel Oni, the mashkin of a poor man. I'm not causing any damage. A rich man's goods, yeah, that I take for collateral, I have to be careful not to damage. I didn't steal it. The guy gave it to me. I didn't go into his house and take it without permission. But what does Shah say? That a shol shalom bidas is a gazlan. If I take something and use it without permission, I'm a gazlan. So, even though I'm not causing damage to the next person, but I don't have a right. So, again, in the superficial cheshbon is correct. What's it to him? It doesn't hurt him. It doesn't damage him in the least bit. But the respect that I have for someone else's property, which the halacha demands of me, is not just that, you know, their cheretz, to violate it is gezel. So if I take something for use and it's, I don't have permission to use it, it's an issue of gezel. But it's a subtle gezel, because I didn't go to his garage at night and take it out in the middle of the night and take it home. He willfully put it in my possession. This is collateral I lent him, for $100, so he gave me his X. Okay, fine. Now what? So why can't I use it? Why can't I use it? Because you're shol shalom bidas. So, again, the care that we have to have with somebody else's possessions, the property of someone else, how much the Torah demands of us when it comes to using, to taking something from someone else. So from this we can extrapolate to all the other responsibilities we have when we actually have somebody else's money. And their money could come to harm in our possession. The care that we have to have, the responsibility that we have to someone else. Fiduciary responsibilities. How careful we have to be, borrow money from someone. How careful we have to be with it. So these are things that we take and we are superficial about. The intent in none of these cases is to do anything negative. But the Rambam says a lot of what happens in life is negative, not because we want it to or we will to willfully do so, but just that we don't pay enough attention. We don't think deeply enough about the things that we do. There's Rosh Hashiva Tifrach. It's a major yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael today. His name is Rabbi Yavi Ezri Pilz. And his father came from Lodz in Poland, from a Chassidish background. And whatever the reason, 90 years ago, 100 years ago, his father decided that he's going to go off to the Litta to learn in Slobodka. Not exactly what the Chassidish Bochar in Poland did. But he decided he's going from Lodz and he's going and he went to learn and study under the altar of Slobodka. He was there about a year and a half. And after about a year and a half, he came home. I don't know if he went back again, but he came back after about a year and a half and came home. And he was in Lodz for Sukkos. It was funny because I told over the story once from the pulpit in Eretz Yisrael. And I thought it had taken place in Warsaw. And a guy comes over to me and says, listen, that was my grandfather, was in Lodz. So, they had, in this, at least in this part of Lodz, they had big apartment complexes. So they didn't have private sukkahs in that part of Lodz. They had big communal sukkahs like they have in Williamsburg. Kitzah Hadvar, so it was the first night of Yontav, he's about 20 years old, and they finished the meal, and he's there with his whole huge pile of his friends, and they're shooting the breeze in the sukkah after the meal. So he looks up, and in the shadows outside the sukkah, he sees an elderly man standing. So he's just standing, hanging around it. So he tells his friends, we've got to get out of here. We're disturbing this man. So they started to razz him. What are you talking about? And they were just making things up. Come on, what's with you? So they spoke another 15, 20 minutes, and then he looks up again. And this old man is still in the shadows outside the sukkah as he walked in. So this time he became insistent. And he said, we have to get out of here. I don't know why, what, when, where, but we're disturbing this man. We've got to leave. So his friends, he was insistent, so they agreed with him. But they weren't going to give him a free ride, though, that he wasn't getting from them. So they said, okay, we're leaving. So they went out of the sukkah, and they went around to the side. And they looked through the cracks in the wall. And they said, we're going to watch what happens. We'll see if you know what you're talking about or not. So no sooner did they leave than the old man goes in and he marches into the sukkah, sits down, and he opens up a little package. And what does he have inside this package? A piece of challah and a piece of herrig. So they realized he was embarrassed that anyone should see that on the first night of Yom Tov, all he had to eat was a piece of challah and a piece of herrig. That's it. So he didn't want anyone to see him. So he was waiting for them to leave. So Rav Pilz's father said the following. He says, I wasn't any kinder, more compassionate than my friends. I wasn't swifter than they were. I wasn't more advanced in my Benodom Nechavera than they were. So he says, why is it that I observed this and realized it and they didn't? And even after I told them, they still didn't see it. So solely for one reason. It has nothing to do with me. He says, I started under the altar for a year and a half, and the altar beat us over the head. Don't live your life with your eyes open. See and understand what you see. Just don't look at things and look away from them. Look, observe, and understand what you see. And then deal. And because of that, when I looked at this man outside, and he was hanging out, the bells rang that something's wrong here. But this is a core of the altar to live life beyond the superficial. Don't be deceived by the superficial look of things in life. There are whole stories which lie behind that superficiality. And if we're observant and aware, we can pick up on them. And a lot of times for our benefit and for the benefit of the person that we're observing. The realization that someone has a need. He's in need. He's disturbed by something. And he needs an arm around the shoulder. He's not going to hang up a big flag. Hey, I need your help. But if you look at him, you see he's not himself. It's a wolf. It's not the way he normally comes. So that's my call to action. But it needs insight into life around us. An insight into life around us is not easy to come by. Not easy. The saying the name of Rav Lezer Telza, Tzadik Levrocha, that he was ill near the end of his life. And he said, he made an observation. He said, a person that's ill is like a child. This is why, he says, a child thinks only about themselves. When you get ill, you get in that rut also, and you think too much about yourself. Even in that state, you have to transcend yourself and look at others. And in many situations in life, you know, we're preoccupied by real issues, not by things that are frivolous. When I was an Oval for my father, Oliver Shalom, I realized this, that in the stress of Avelis, one can almost naturally become a little withdrawn from the rest of the world around one. One turns inward. But in that inward turn, I lose my sense for the rest of the world around me. So it's understandable at that time, but it's something that we have to push beyond. Can't live that way. So the Rambam is telling us how careful we have to be. Everything seems fine. And to boot, I can probably look around, there's 100 other people doing the same thing that I'm doing. But it doesn't make it right. It just means it's even harder to pick up on. If I'm the one that's out of sync, if everyone else is marching correctly and I'm out of sync, so I can ask myself, well, listen, there's one or two choices, you know, Rabbi Kassiros or Lazangazunt and Chavetz Chaim. So So he used to tell it this way. He says the guy is, puts on the traffic report, and he went up the off-ramp of the Bill Parkway, and he's going west to the eastbound lanes. And the cars, a million cars, he's dodging all the cars flying at him. And he puts it on, he has the traffic report. And the guy in the helicopter says, you know, on the Bill Parkway, there's a guy, one guy going the wrong way. You know, he's going west and east. But there's one guy, there's 1,000 guys going the wrong way. You know, so that makes it even harder when at least when we're on our own, so we're out of sync. So we realize, okay, but there's a lot of company. It becomes very difficult to see. And number three is one of life's big challenges. Now the Rambam does not say, it's interesting, the Rambam doesn't say it's easy to do tshuva for these things. Some are easy to do tshuva, some are not so easy to do tshuva for. The Rambam's point in all of these five is not the ease and the difficulty of doing tshuva. It's the fact that we don't even realize there's an issue. If we realize it's an issue, some things are easy to do something about, and some things are difficult to do about, but at least we know there's something to do. The third one is one that's very difficult to deal with. But the Rambam tells us the problem, the ultimate problem in dealing with it, is that people do not have any sensitivity that there's an issue at all. Hamistakel ba'arayas, a person that looks at women inappropriately. Maila al daito, it crosses his mind. Shein b'kach klum, a big deal. What did I do? Shu oimer, b'chiba alti, or karafti etzlo, did I touch him? So what's the problem? And the Rambam tells us, what is the depth of the problem? The depth of the big deal, okay. The Torah itself says we're not supposed to do that. But the Rambam says that that's only a fraction of the problem. Why? Because if we understood what was involved there, that which we take in with our eyes, if it's inappropriate, is a serious chet. It makes the person more likely that they're going to violate the moral codes altogether. What we see with the eyes, we're not the same. Whether on the good side or the bad side, every experience in life changes us. We don't remain the same. We don't remain the same. Chaim Shmulevitz talks about it. He says, we think that we could do any chait in the world, and I'm the same as I was before. Mildly different, no big shakes. But it's not the way it is. Chait changes us. And this chet in particular changes. It changes the makeup of the person. Now, the Rambam writes in the Shemitah Prokem that there are different issues that we face in life. There are inherent behaviors and acquired behaviors. Acquired behaviors we could eliminate because they're not part of the personality. So a person, you know, got himself in the mood that he thinks he'll enjoy killing people. Listen, a normal human being is not made that way. I don't know, nuts or something else, but you know. But if a person got himself in such a rut, so he can get himself out of that rut too. If he got himself a meshugana, I can't tell you what a meshugana can do. But a guy that's not a meshugana, but he got it in his head to do something which is not normal to do. So it's not part of the basic human personality. If he's a normal person, he can get it out of his head and uproot it. But the Rambam says those things which are rooted in man's makeup, he cannot eliminate. What he has to do is find ways to control them, to keep them in check, but they're not going away. That's the inherent biological nature of man. So the Ribbono Shel Olam made people with biological needs, and the biological needs are fortunate because that allows us to do that which we have to do in this world. Without it, man cannot function at all. You see it in many, many ways. If you know older people, one of the most difficult things from the health standpoint is when people lose their appetite. we don't realize while we're healthy, if you don't see older people, we don't realize what's the bruch of having an appetite. You sit down, the food is geschmack, you know, it smells good, there's a good aroma, I want to eat, and it goes down. Maybe even too much goes down, but it goes down. You know, a person that doesn't have appetite, imagine something else. Imagine the Rabbeinu Shlomo made the world. He could have made the world this way. That to live, you have to eat 3 plates of sawdust every day. Meaning to say, it doesn't taste more than sawdust, whatever it is, but it all tastes like sawdust. Now imagine you have to eat 3 big heaping plates of sawdust every day to live. And if you don't, you're going to die. You know, what an avodah would it be? And there's no flavoring. There's no sense of taste, the aroma, nothing at all to make it appealing. It's just like, it's almost impossible. And older people suffer from this problem. It's a major, major problem. And there are major industries, in fact, creating supplements, whatever, to deal with it, that if they give very small amounts of food, which are packed with a tremendous amount of nutrients, so that even if they get a little bit down, they can sustain themselves. So all the Rabbeinu Shlomo Leila made it within our nature to do all the things that we have to do in this world. Otherwise, we wouldn't function in any area. Chazal say, if there were no taivas in the world stopped reproducing. Just stopped, ground to a halt. And medically, it's the way it is. If a person has, for some reason, that his drives are impaired, so he can't involve himself in reproduction. Just grind to a halt. It's like, yes, and go bang your head in the wall. That's so. The Rabbeinu Shlomo Leila, it's amazing. I've always, it's from something that I studied in science long, long ago. It left me with a tremendous insight into how the Rabbeinu Shlomo made the Bria. Why do we feel tired after our muscles feel tired after we work? For what reason? What happens? What's the process? It's an amazing thing. The process is that we have the buildup of waste products from the burning of energy, and they build up in our muscles, and that's what makes us tired. So at a certain point we just plop down, we can't move anymore. So what do we have to do? We have to rest. While we rest, the body cleans them out and restores us. So I said, this is unbelievable what the Rabbeinu Shlomo did. If the Rabbeinu Shlomo didn't do this, we drive ourselves into the ground and kill ourselves. We just keep on working until we collapsed. So what did Rabbeinu Shlomo do? As a byproduct of the work that we do, we're building up waste products in the muscles. And when they reach a certain point, it's a shutdown mechanism. That's it. Like the compressor overheats in the fridge. That's it. It has to close down. It'll stay off a few hours. It cools down. Okay. Now it comes on again. It starts to function again. So the Rabbeinu Shlomo built within us the biological means of shutting us down regularly. It's a direct consequence of that which we do in this world. That's what shuts us down. So the Rabbeinu Shlomo made a balance. I work, and then I reach a point. I just have to stop. So the body renews itself. That's true in everything that the Rabbeinu Shlomo did in this world. So it's necessary. But the innate biological needs of man don't go away. So the problem is that we have to keep them in check and find balance. And a person that exposes himself to things he's not supposed to see, so it changes that balance. It puts us out of balance. And the Rambam says the result of that will be, can lead, and nobody knows when and where in this world. The Rambam tells us, Shehi goremes legufon shel arayim, shenemar velo sasuro achrei levavachem v'yachrei enecha. Be careful about that which we put into our mind, and be careful that which we put into our eyes. We let our eyes digest. And Chazal were very, very clear about this. It's one of the things that many from people have lost sight, that it's just not on their radar at all. I mean, if you haven't gone and learned in the yeshivas, it's not on your radar. Chazal minced no words, and that's... I heard this chazal when I was yet in high school from one of my rabbeim. And I always wondered, I'd look for it, I didn't find it when I was been learning Evan Ezra the last 2 years. So I found it in the Gron, Evan Ezra. The Gron brings Yerushalmi and Ksuvas. We're used to the fact, and we'll take it in this sense that we do it, because ultimately it's correct, is Ein Apotropos L'Arayos, as I'll say. What it actually means is that nobody should be appointed the guardian for women, because nobody is above getting involved where he doesn't belong, shouldn't be involved. That's what it actually means in Shas. But we, you know, we've taken it to mean that no person is protected from human frailty in this area. And Chazal go on to state in Yerushalmi, afilu lechosid shebechasidim, the most pious, truly pious, not the guy that's a faker, no. The one that is truly pious is not, never, can never be secure in this area. And Chazal did not mince words. Chazal are so cutting, they don't mince words. They, you know, they're not politically correct. They're cutting in the way they present it. The Gemara tells us at the end of Kiddushin, the story of Amram Chasida. Yeah, just let's realize one thing before with the story. A chosid means someone that loses his knife and lefni mishur sadin. So it depends who decides you're a chosid. If the Godel Ador decides someone's a chosid, that's a pretty big statement. And it means on his scale of values, there's something here. Okay, nice. Now let's say it's not the Godel Ador, let's say the Vilna Gaon decided someone was a chosid. So that gives us, it's a different picture of what this. So let's decide it wasn't the Vilna Gaon, the Rambam now decided somebody was a chosid. So you're going to say this must really be a holy man. And what happens if the Gemara decided someone's a chosid? On their scale of values? You know, it depends on scale of values. I was sitting at a chasana once with my Shreya Zalba Zangezunt and one of his chaveirim, Rav Aaron Kreiser Zatzal. He was some guys that went to why you knew him. He taught there a very low level share. They wanted to give him a high level share and he didn't want it. He was a super guy. A super guy. So I was sitting, you know, in the schus of my shver, Zalazangazunt. I sat with many Roshubas that were probably old enough to be my grandfather. Because I came to Chasanis with him. So my shver, these were his chaverim. So, you know, this. So I didn't know where to put me. So they said, oh, you have to put me with my shver. We're opening in a city. So I sat with Roshubas that were old enough to be my grandfather. So Rav Aaron Kreiser, that's all happened to be, was a lifelong chaver of my shveres from here and throughout life afterwards. So one night we're sitting in a chasana, and he was in a good mood. And he got to talking about Rechaim Epstein, that's all, it was nifted this year, he says. And his modesty, he said, Rav Aaron, he says, I wasn't supposed to be Rosh Hashanah, it wasn't for me. He says, but Rav Chaim, and he knew him his whole life. He says, he was the real deal. He had the lomdis, was a lamdin, he had the asmoda, the yerushamayim, the midis, the frumkai, everything Rosh Hashanah has to have, he had. So I was blown away. I'm sitting next to a super goyim, right? He learned with Rabbi Chomer in Baranovich. Yeah, he learned in Mir in Europe. He understood at his level what gedolim was. And for him to say someone is the real deal to be a Rosh Hashanah, that's a statement. So Chazal said, Rav Amram Chasida, at the end of the story, they wrote him down, not Rav Amram the fake Chassid, but Rav Amram the real Chassid. He was a Ish Chassid. So what does Nimar tell us about Rav Amram Chasida? Nimar tells us that kidnappings were, unfortunately, you know, now we're back to it in Africa today, but kidnappings were a normal thing in their world. So this bunch of women were kidnapped and they were freed from, I guess they paid ransom and they freed them from the kidnappers. But the problem is, well, you didn't have a good system of safe public transportation for women to get them home. Nor was the hotel in this hick town. So now they had this bunch of women and they had to stay someplace. So they decided, okay, this old feeble rabbi, Rav Amram Chasida, so they'll put him in his house, but not in his house, he can't have yichud. So they put him up on the second floor. But they didn't have a staircase, they had a heavy steel ladder. It took five guys to move the steel ladder. So they slept, they sent the women up there to sleep the night, and they slept the ladder away. No, shouldn't good. Ram Sida came, Yitzharah got the best of him, and he slept his feeble little old weak Talmud Chacham, slept this ladder himself, and put it up, and started climbing up. So he couldn't stop himself, but Ram Sida was an urban creature of the 20th century. He understood urban life very well. If you yell police, so everybody locks the door, they're afraid what's going to happen. So what do you yell to be safe? You yell fire. There's fire, everyone's afraid. The house could burn down too. They're not safe, so they have to come outside to see what's going on. So you yell fire. So he yelled, Nura, Vayamram, there's a fire. A fire, the whole town could burn down. So everyone came running out to see what's going on. So they stopped him from doing what he wanted to do. So he said, better I should be embarrassed in this world than in the world to come. But at the end of the day, Chazal called him Rav Amram Chassida. Not the supposed Chassid, not the fake Chassid, the real Chassid. So that's what the Rambam's telling us. We think that, you know, moral issues, we're morally strong. What's the difference? Where we go? What we do? How many times in my life have I heard people tell me, if you know what's right and wrong, you can go where you want. What's the problem? You know what's right. It's easy to do what's right. It's a lot easier to do what's wrong. To do what's right. And at times, you know, those things which are innate to the human being, the Yetzirah gets the best of us. And the Rambam says the worst of this chet is that we don't realize it's a problem. Not that it's so easy to do tshuva from it, but if we realize it's a problem, so at least on the radar, there's a thought that it's something to do something about. Number four. A person that takes pride or feels good about himself when he sees someone else mess up. Right? They say, whatever, a guy came running into the yeshiva in Slobodka on Shabbos, took his jacket off, rolled up his sleeve in front of the whole yeshiva, and then he realized it's Shabbos. So they said, the Alta saw some guy chuckling. This guy, not into his face, but he saw him. So the Alta went over to him and he told him, he said, you're here for years and you know better. What the deficiency you came with, you still had. You were that way when you came and you're still that way now. And you miscovered becoming a chavero. Now, the Rambam is very careful to point out this. There's no insult or humiliation that's involved in this. The fishain chavero. I'm not standing next to the guy that he said, I'm not laughing, I'm on the other end of the race measure, she doesn't see me at all. He doesn't get any humiliation, although Bisho didn't embarrass him. I evaluated the things that I do, that they're good, and they're wise. And this guy's a blockhead. He comes in on Shabbos. It's like putting on tefillin in the base register. She's out of it. They shiur mechlolo shu mechubad mechaver obozi. And what's the point of it? The point of it at the end of the day is that I'm hot stuff, and the other guy is, well, he's what he is. As Meraveim used to tell me, he says, the two types of balgaiva in the world. There's one type of balgaiva that makes himself great. The world is wonderful, good, big people, but me, I'm up here. There's another bald guy who, listen, I'm not hot stuff. But these guys, let me tell you about them. And some people, they have both miles. You know. So the Rambam writes that the person doesn't have respect for other people. In his eyes, he looks down upon someone else. And he's haughty about himself. Now I asked myself once, how do you deal with the issue of miscavered b'klon chavero? There are certain things are just out and out funny. What could you do? Listen, if a guy walked in on Yom Kippur and started putting on a tefillin in front of the shul, that would be mighty funny. Let's be real, you know. I'm a real person. I mean, humor is something which is out of proportion. A guy walking over here and sit down right over here and start putting on his tefillin in the middle of shachris on Yom Kippur. It is funny. There's no two ways about it. I even got a smile at a Barry, as tired as he is. So I asked myself once, how could you not violate Miskavet B'Kon Chaver? How do you not violate it? It's nice, okay. The Rambam says it's not a good, not a nice thing. Very nice. But how do you not violate it? It's funny as can be. It is. So I realized once, after a lot of thought, that the answer is that we need to empathize with the person that did it. When I see it happen, put myself immediately in his shoes. Just feel the regish that he must feel at that moment. When he realizes what he just did, there's 300 guys around him in shul, and he's in the middle taking out his tefillin on Yom Kippur. Just stop to think for a moment how this poor guy feels. If we focused on that, we'll feel anguish, we'll feel tzar. There won't be any way that we could live. Because a margish is tzar. The problem is that we don't empathize, so we don't feel his tzar. So looking at it, if I don't take him into account, it's funny. It is. It's realistically funny. But what we need to do is to empathize with him. Yeah.
What would happen if you controlled yourself, you didn't laugh, but you still thought it was funny?
It's also the Rambam. It's a regish lachara. It's not an external.
Even though you control yourself,
externally, but if internally is also. The Rambam says nothing to do that affects him. It affects me. It's my feeling that I'm hori and he's what he is. You know. So it's an internal thing. It's not an external thing. Now, finally, the 15th, the Rambam says is the following. And a person that is suspicious of other people, and that maybe they sinned, it looks fluky what he's doing. It's not a chet. Did I harm the guy? Did I take steps against him? Did I rank him out in public? But I went up in the beam and said, Barry is a. Didn't do any such thing. I'm thinking about him. What the devil? So what? So what did I do? B'chiyei shom eloch shad. All it is I'm suspicious. I didn't decide he's no good. I'm chayshad. Shema osa loy osa. But v'hoin yodeya sheza oven. Shameisim odom kosher b'dayta gabal ha'era. I'm considering a person that is a odom kosher. It's a proper person. Observes the Torah, the mitzvahs properly. Is someone that's improper or a shiloh if he's proper. I don't have a right to do that. It's not respectful, the respect that you're supposed to have for another person. I saw once a person used to invite a person to his house regularly on Shabbos. And one time he looked out the window when the guy left and he saw the guy hail the cab. And he got in the cab and the cab was zoomed off. So he was so upset at the guy that he never invited him again. A number of months went by, and then he heard the guy passed away. So he went to Sitchilo. So someone in the family told him, oh, Shmerel, you know, I have to tell you, when my dad came out of your house, and my brother came out of your house, he had a heart attack. And he grabbed the cab and raced to the hospital to try to save his life, but he never recovered. He was in the hospital a few months, he died. You know, we see things in life, we think we know what they're about. But we need the humility in life to realize that there's a lot more going on than we know. My father, Olam HaShalom, told me a story about himself. It's a classic. My father lived in Brownsville for about 30 years. He was born on the east side. About 1925, he came to Brownsville, lived there till 1955. And there was a child. So he had his buddies there, he grew up there. His whole life was there. In 1955, we moved to East New York. So we moved, I think Shavuos time, if I remember right. And my youngest sister was born a year and something later on the night of Simchas Torah. So since we lived in Brownsville, the hospital was on the edge of Brownsville and Crown Heights. So my mother, Allah Shalom, had to go to the hospital. That's the hospital. So my father was late at night. He drove her to the hospital. So he told me long afterwards, I remember him telling, he says, I pulled up at a light in Brownsville. It's 11:30, 12 at night. He says, and my buddies were coming back from Akofas. It's the night of Simchas Torah. And here they are, they're pissed. They're about to cross right in front of my car. He says, can you imagine? They're going to say, he says, look at this Welcher guy. He says, 1 year out of the old neighborhood, he's so messed up already. He's having a chutzpah. He drives his car noch anuntif through the old part of town. He's so off the derech already, you know? So he says, I ducked my head down behind the dashboard that nobody should see me. Let's see, somebody, one of his buddies, went by and saw him, you know? Driving on the night of Yom Tov, Mamrish, through the old part of town. So, you know. I saw Sinanowitz. He was driving. I saw it. Yeah, you're right, you saw it. Maybe he's going for Pekoch Nefesh. Never cross your mind. How do you know why he went? Yeah. Listen, you could have seen me in a cave on Yom Tov, too. My mother, Allah Hashalom, came here. Once, so Shavuos, and on Yom Tov, I think it was the second night of Yom Tov, or the first day of Yom Tov, I discovered she came without all her medicines. The medicine she needed that was for Bikoch Nefesh not to take. So, I figured, okay, the first thing I'll do, I knew I can get medicine in the pharmacy, so I call up. She took medicine from an online pharmacy, so I called him up. So the guy tells me, HIPAA laws, he's not allowed to tell me. I said, could you explain this to me? I said, there's an elderly lady in her 80s over here, and she could die if she doesn't have her medicines. And you're telling me, HIPAA laws, you can't tell it, you wouldn't tell me. He was wrong on the law subsequently. The law is that he's supposed to tell me in a situation where it's, you know, it is suitable identification. But if it endangers life, he's supposed to tell me. But this was like, you know, forget about it. Combined on Yom Kippur, you know, he wasn't hearing from it. So what could I do? So I waited till it was late at night. I didn't want to do this, and I called a taxi to my house, and I went down to the Five Towns. My brother was away for Yom Kippur. She lived in my brother's house. I had the key to the house. I went in, I closed the alarm. I went to her bedroom. I took a bag of medicine. I had the care wait, and I came back. So I didn't tell her how I got medicines for her. She thought I got medicine somewhere from the pharmacy. I never told her how I got her medicines. But somebody could have seen me driving around town. I went from here to Five Towns and back on the night of Shavuos, the second night of Yom Tov. It happened. So the Rambam tells us how careful we have to be not to be choshed b'ksheir. But the limud from this Rambam altogether is how careful we have to be not to be superficial. To look beyond the obvious and all of the things that the Rambam talked about here. On the surface, everything seems fine. And all of life demands that we look a little bit more deeply at the things that we're involved in. And we may discover some very, very interesting things. May the Rebbe Rishon grant us that wisdom of the Messiah. The Rabbi was driving a taxi.
Did I read
that's true?
Sometimes.